the deal, the way this works. Each panel is organized around one of our community proposals that came out of the SPS. So the first panel is on needs assessments, transportation needs assessments. You guys coordinate the shirt thing, or what's that about?
I wish we had.
So, let's see, there's one more of you that did not get the lavender memo.
I did not.
That's Jonathan is on the phone. London, from UC Davis.
Oh, do I have to go one more?
Look,
one more page.
The last one.
Mm-hmm. All right, Jonathan, are you there?
Good afternoon. Yes, I'm here.
All right, so we're going to let these three go, and thank you for being on the phone. So each panelist, in keeping with Melissa's personality, has 7.5 minutes. I'm just saying that's what she told me. So I'm going to spare you reading their bio, which will take 6.5 of their 7.5 minutes. Dr. Bird is the interim health officer in Fresno County. Awesome to have you in that role. Dr. Rutledge is the epidemiologist in Fresno County and actually understands all that thing about herd health and things like that. So thank you.
That's extraordinary.
Yes, I hear you on that. Alan Thompson is a senior planner with the Southern California Association of Governments. Thank you for being here. And on the phone, we see your picture, so we kind of know who we're talking to. Is Jonathan London. Jonathan is the director, Center for Regional Change at UC Davis. So, Dr. Bird, looks like you're going to go first.
All righty.
Go. Thank you.
Can you hear me all right without a mic? Okay. I don't know how well my voice carries. But I do want to thank you, Lynn, and
you're
thank
welcome.
The council for inviting the health department to be here with you today in this important period of exchange. I want to also thank and acknowledge my colleagues in the health department that are here with me today. Joe Prado in the back, Sarah Boss, Rosemary Amaral, and of course, Dr. Jared Rutledge, who is here.
On is a detail. On.
There we go. If you do decide that you need a microphone, the podium mic is available right next to you there, so if you need it.
If you can't hear me, somebody just shout or raise a hand. But before I get started, I just want to say how, as a health officer, gratifying a story like this is on the front page of a local newspaper. I hope to see more of that in the future. I want to start off with one of our favorite slides that we have in the health department. It's actually a slide that it shows the various basic contributors to the various chronic illnesses that are attributed to death. It accounts for about 80% or more of premature deaths in Californians. As we all know, and as you can see here, genetic predisposition and behavioral patterns are very important contributors. But you can also see that social circumstance, environmental exposure, and healthcare, or access to healthcare, are also very important contributors to those illnesses and premature death. What I really wanted to do was give you a summary of the health in Fresno County, particularly with regards to those illnesses and chronic illnesses that are related to a lack of or less physical activity. And I wanted to do that using two health rankings, county health rankings. The first of these comes from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. It's their annual county health rankings. And you can see that it measures both health outcomes, and I apologize if you can't see that well. It's my fault. But it measures both health outcomes and health factors. And it rates all the counties across the United States, but it rates California counties amongst themselves in the state. As far as health outcomes, we ranked about 46 of the 57 that were ranked last year. Those outcomes being length of life, where we ranked 38, and quality of life, where we ranked 54. That quality of life being measured mainly by responses to annual health surveys done nationally, and our low infant birth rate. The health factors, those things that contribute to those health outcomes, include four basic groups of health factors. Health behaviors, where we ranked about, 46?
Yeah.
And that includes things that are pertinent to our discussion today. Adult obesity, where we have a particular problem in Fresno County. I think it's almost 7 out of 10 of our adults are overweight or obese, and 42% of our students are overweight or obese. It also includes physical inactivity, where we don't rate very well, and access to exercise opportunities. We're not too far off. Another health factor is clinical care, where we rank 42. Our social and economic factors, sadly, we're ranking very low at 55. And our physical environment, which includes our air quality and our driving patterns, on the bottom, where we rank 43, I believe. The other county ranking is done by the California Department of Public Health. It's their annual county health status indicators. From this one, I just wanted you to gather that our age-adjusted death rate for all causes in this county ranks around the middle third of all the counties in the state. But for those that are pertinent to our discussion today, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, it also ranks about the middle third of the counties. However, diabetes, where we have a particular problem in this county, Alzheimer's disease, heart disease, and stroke all rank very near the bottom. And again, on this chart, you can also see that we're very near the bottom on low infant birth rate, and again, sadly, persons under 18 in poverty, we're ranking around 57. These next two slides mainly just show where Fresno places as far as the percentage of people that walk or bike to work. In this chart right here, it's around 2%, and in this one, it's more like 4%. So somewhere from 2 to 4% people walking or biking to work in our area. These last slides are merely what I call my co-benefit slides. It references two studies that you're probably already familiar with, one in London, one in the Bay Area, which indicated that simply increasing the average amount of time individuals participate in active transport, walk or bike to work, can have significant reductions in heart disease, stroke and diabetes, dementia, depression, and breast and colon cancer, and at the same time reducing carbon dioxide emissions. So at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Jared Rundich. He's going to give us some details on these chronic illnesses and premature death within Fresno County.
There it is. Okay, so that's great, right? We have quite a big target over here to throw lots and lots of money at. We have no way of focusing on where our communities are that need these resources. Where are communities that are different than anybody else? What I like is when people say, oh, cancer doesn't discriminate, heart disease doesn't discriminate. As an epidemiologist, my job is that it does discriminate, and I'm going to tell you exactly who it's targeting. So here I actually made 17 maps in 48 hours.
That sounds like a reality TV show.
To illustrate this, and then they told me the time constraint. So you get three. All right, so I made a composite mortality index that basically weighted causes of death from like 7 or 8 different factors, okay? And I'll be mapping them, and I'll show you where our communities are in need. So first thing, what people that don't work with death data have to wrap their heads around is a heart attack is not a gunshot, okay? This was a history of poor health behavior that led to the death. So we are not looking at the communities who are sickest now. We are looking at the communities who have been sick for 30, 40, 50, 60 years. So conceptually, get that, kind of wrap your mind around that, where our sick communities have been. All of the data here is presented has been in a 5-year baseline. So this has been ironed out and smooth. This is not just last year's data. This is historical trends in these zip codes for the past few years. So what am I going to be looking at? I weighted chronic lung disease, asthma, COPD, emphysema, colorectal cancer, diabetes, heart attack, hyperlipidemia, or obesity. These were listed on the death certificate as primary cause of death, contributing cause of death, or underlying cause of death. And we've actually found that each, almost like Legos, each part of the county looked very different. Who was dying of what at more than their neighbor? Which is very, very interesting. We also looked at mode of transportation. So that 2 to 3%, we know where they live. We know that one community in particular bikes 26%, but they cheat. They only have 49 people in their community. Okay, so this is the map. And if you've not looked at a GIS map before, it takes some getting used to. So if you found yourself nauseated or concerned in any way, just remember that's the shape we're looking at. Okay? So this is our percentage bike to work. So how did you get here? 16 years or older, and you have biked to work in the last 5 years on more days than not. And what we see is this white area is 0%. So look at the land mass. Does anybody want to take a stab at what the percentage for the entire county of single vehicle, single occupant vehicle transportation to work is? The percentage of the working population in Fresno County? About 87 to 92%. Okay? So, zero. Look at all the white. It is very bad. We have some pockets in Clovis, as well as a pocket down by Sanger, where we have slightly higher, 3 to 4%. And then we have our outlier here. But our 1 to 2% is this shaded blue area. If we were to look at it in terms of percentage of population, that's about 72% of our population from a county perspective. So that's where we get our overall, you know, 2 to 4, 1 to 2%. What's this? This is percent walk to work. Now, again, this is misleading. These people work at home and they're farmers. Or they. So if walking to work involves a 50-yard walk to the backyard. But we can see here, walking to work almost is non-existent in Fresno and Clovis metropolitan. So what is this? The YIPL calculation. Years of potential life lost. So this gives a quality measure and says your death counts more the younger you are from 75. So the blue areas are the areas in which meet or are below the California state average. The red areas are the areas in which we violated California state average or have had significant years of potential life lost. We can see that in almost all of Fresno City. A little more close. Sanger. And over here in our more rural west side of the county. This is our composite mortality measure, or mortality index. This takes into account deaths associated with diabetes, cardiovascular disease, obesity, heart attack, colorectal cancer, breast cancer, physical inactivity. Anything that I could think of when I was pulling on death data, I pulled out and geocoded and then weighted in terms of a 5-year rate to find stable communities that were dying early of preventable deaths. And this is what we get. Now, I had a brilliant suggestion from actually my supervisor who said, well, that's great, Jared, you're focusing on the one aspect of this, and I was like, I was told to focus on health, so I'm focusing on health. He says, well, what else are we looking at when we're looking at communities that are sick? And I said, well, economics comes into play. So we went to the California Department of Public Health and actually pulled up their definition for what a disadvantaged and severely disadvantaged environment is. And if you make 80% of the Californian median household income, you are disadvantaged. If you make 60%, you are severely disadvantaged. Now, unfortunately, when I was pulling maps and sorting through all of my maps, I neglected to show you the layer that sits on top of this layer. But I can show you that this community, these communities, and these communities are all either disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged. So now, out of approximately 60 to 62 zip codes in the entire Fresno County, we have nailed down 12 zip codes that are dying early from preventable diseases associated that could be improved upon by making a walkable area or a bicycle-friendly area, and that are economically destitute. either advanced, you know, disadvantaged or severely disadvantaged. So now we have a target. So take your limited resources that we have to work with, and we can focus them in the areas that have the poorest health outcomes. This is the diabetes map, and I wanted to show you several maps to show what is going on with diabetes in Fresno County. So remember, these were listed as a contributing, underlying, or primary cause of death. And you can see our hot zones in Sanger, Fresno, and Fryant. And in fact, this community here has one of the highest years of potential lost, years lost among our elderly community in all of Fresno County, in terms of breast cancer, colorectal cancer, heart attack, and diabetes. And this is heart attack, the heart attack map. Why I like the heart attack map.
Only epidemiologists like heart attack. That's like it really.
The heart attack map is a beautiful map. Because what it's doing is it's showing you urban-wise, other than a few outlying communities that are mostly rural, it's equal risk associated in Fresno, Clovis, and surrounding communities. Heart attack is pretty much universal. So, those are my maps. I have quite a few more that I can show you. Like I said, I have 17. And if you're interested in communicable disease, I got billions. Do you have any questions? Yes.
Wait. We're going to do questions. Sorry. We're going to do questions at the end of the panel. Mr. Roberts, put your hand down. No. So thank you. We'll do panel questions at the end. Okay. Can you hold on? Don't forget. You live in the heart attack area. I can't help that. That's a different problem. Alan Thompson. Thank you. Do you have any maps?
I have one map and it's half from around here, so who cares?
It's hard to beat a heart attack map, I'm just saying.
I know. I did have an obesity map, but I did not include it. And I am living proof that you don't have to be 140-pound spandex clad cyclist, you know, to be a bicycle commuter. I bike about 3,000 to 5,000 miles a year. Oh, I bike every year from San Francisco to L.A. And, you know, I get 20 miles per bagel, which is probably a lot more enjoyable. This is Skag. This is my map. Thank you.
And 38,000 square miles, 191 cities, 18 million people, and the majority of them all work in this area right here. And I'm just going to just glom off of what these gentlemen were saying, and that is that part of the problem that we have in our region is that people, in order to be able to afford homes, will live out here and out here and out here, and then they will drive all the way here. So they will drive an hour and a half, 2 hours in the morning, you know, and develop all that stress because you're sitting there and you're focused on those cars, and you are not doing anything but just getting mad. You know, you're listening to your talk radio, you're just stuck in traffic, and then at home, going back to at the end of the day, you're doing the exact same thing. You just want to get home. So when you get home, what do? Do you really feel like cooking? Do you really feel like going to the store? No, you're going to go to McDonald's, you're going to go order some pizza, you're going to sit in front of the TV, maybe have a beer, and then you're going to do the same thing the next day, and the next day, and the next day. And then the next thing you know, you've got all the conditions that you guys are talking about. And it's because of a lot of things, but part of it, you know, is not just the lifestyle that you've chosen, but also the lifestyle that we have created through our land use patterns, the way we've done our zoning, the way it's all been set up to be a car-centric society instead of a people-centric society. So one of our advocates made a great point, that if you build your cities for people, you'll have people. If you build your cities for cars, what are you going to have? And the answer is cars. So I do active transportation planning. I'm also a bicycle commuter. This is where we are right now. We've got 30,000 square miles. The red is existing class 1, class 2, class 3, bike lanes, bike paths, and whatnot. And what do you notice about that? They're not really connected to each other. They're just sort of there. You know, some cities have done it. They don't like talking to their neighbors, so it'll stop a quarter mile from the city border so that they don't have to talk to anyone. And so it just isn't that much. But then we have Lovely Plan. And that shows that we have something that can work if you had them all connected. So how do we do that? We developed a plan in 2012 to close the gaps, develop regional networks. And there we actually have something that makes sense. It's built on the National Freeway System. It's not necessarily freeways per se, but we close gaps, we look at ways to develop regional routes so that even though someone may not travel from Palm Springs all the way to Santa Monica, if they want to go from Palm Springs to Riverside, they can do it. And just like, you know, the freeway system, you're not going to drive from Boston to LA every day, but you're going to use the freeway system on a regular basis. And this backs onto what's happening in the nation. There's a national state and regional bikeway planning set up. That's with ASHTO, American Association of State and Highway Transportation Officials, and the Adventure Cycling Association. So this is happening all over the country. So everyone's coming on to think that, you know, the world at 15 miles an hour is much more enjoyable than at 55 miles an hour, or in the case of LA, at 3 miles an hour on a freeway. Yes. So we did our active transportation plan, which is what you just saw. And notice I didn't include sidewalks because it was something we hadn't really thought about, that was a local issue. And before 2008, we thought that bikes were a local issue. So the priority has gone up from just a local city issue to something more in tune with what we do on a regular basis. So when we developed ours, they said, hey, you've got a great plan. How are you going to implement it? And we were like, it's a local issue. And so they said, no. So they wanted a strategic funding plan. We wanted a complete streets plan because SB 375 was just passed in AB 1358, which is all about complete streets, sustainable community strategies, safe routes to schools. So all this stuff started coming into play on a regional level instead of at a local level. Health and equity performance measures. And incorporating chronic disease outcomes. So these are all things that they wanted us to look at as we started going towards our 2016 RTP. So one of the first things we do is, all right, we need your help. So we convened six committees, which were made up of our elected officials, specific stakeholders, such as county public health departments, the Safe Routes to School National Partnership, and others, all geared towards, you know, the various performance areas. And they were actually able to make policy, and they gave us direction. So I'm just going to go through a whole bunch of quick directions that they gave us. Develop an inventory of existing reports. So this is actually turning into not just a needs analysis, but our existing conditions report. And since you always start off with a plan of where am I, followed by where do I want to go, followed by how am I going to get there. So develop an inventory. Where are we? You know, develop, and then they wanted a survey of all the local governments. We have 191 cities. So survey the cities, see if they have any existing planned and proposed bicycle infrastructure. And I love our cities to death, but it's been a year and a half, and we have about a 40% response rate. You know, so we started working on other things. So we had our intern start contacting them. So they had their people pass it down to their interns, who knows absolutely nothing about what's going on. So this is turning into a little Keystone Cops type of event. So it's very amusing about how that works. So develop funding estimates, of course, and it's very expensive depending on each county. We found that our previous estimates were off. To develop a bike path in LA County, we thought was around $2.6 million per mile. And in our more rural areas, about $600,000 per square mile. It's turning out to be over $3.5 million per mile. Form analysis determined how investments in complete streets can actually improve conditions for underserved low-income communities. When people think of bicyclists, they think of the spandex crowd, they think of it as a recreational or people just trying to get in shape. The majority of the bicyclists in LA and in our counties are people that are commuting to work. We have a huge population that do not have licenses, cannot get licenses, but they do an awful lot of work. They are the ones that are bicycling in the service industry, and they're the ones that are usually biking home at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning after the bars and restaurants close, and they're the ones that are getting hit by the drunk drivers. So that's a huge impact on us. We have about 26 bicyclists in LA County until this year, and about another 90 pedestrians, which comes out to about 36% of all traffic fatalities in LA County are bicyclists or pedestrians. And most of those occur at intersections. So determine the data collection needs and inform schedule modeling efforts. This is an interesting part. You know, so where do we get bicycling data? How many people have bicycling data for their cities? Raise your hand. And I'm keeping my hands down. Notice that? So it isn't done because we have loop detectors to detect cars on our freeways. We have these little things at intersections to detect cars at intersections. What do we have for bicyclists and pedestrians? We don't. We have to hire someone to go out to all these little intersections and actually do counts to try to figure out where that is. That's very expensive,
It all depends on the expertise, which are usually volunteers that are getting paid in pizza.
And so the whole idea is we need something more permanent.
With the active transportation program at the state, we've really pushed hard for our cities to have permanent counters for any active transportation infrastructure that they want to purchase, that they want to install through that program. We don't tell our cities what to do, but we strongly encourage them to do it, and I strongly encourage you, if you're going to be developing active transportation, to have these permanent counters to where you can then do your post analysis after the project has been installed, and then you still have that counting infrastructure in place to build up on future studies and future infrastructure. Develop best practices and performance modeling tools that demonstrate health benefits. That's what you have right there. Determine a strategy to incorporate health and equity measures into the project selection criteria. That, again, is something that we've never done that before. Whenever we've talked about public health for transportation, we've always talked about air quality. We've got ports, we've got trains, we've got all these things that we don't have any control over, such as aircraft emissions. And so, but now we're looking at how, for active transportation, what are the effects of a sedentary lifestyle, of a suburban development, all those things that can relate to active transportation. And that was a survey with which I mentioned at the beginning. And also schools and low income become a resource. As an MPO, the more information we get, the more information that we can provide to our local governments. The more expertise we get, we went from me working half, part-time on this along with all the other projects to a staff of four, which shows the seriousness that our elected officials have put into this to give us these resources. And what they're demanding and what we've provided is the ability to allow our jurisdictions, 191 cities, the ability to apply for grants, help them if they've never applied for grants before, give them information on what information they need. And once they get the grant, how are we going to help them implement the grant so that the money doesn't get rescinded back to the state? So these are the things that we provide to help them help themselves as to the greatest extent possible. And the core deliverables, policy analysis, federal, state, local, safety analysis. I've been just going through all of the data from the state for our region. Regional bikeway network from our county transportation commissions. We are severely lacking on a regional sidewalk inventory. The only thing that we know is that the city of LA has about 10,000 miles of sidewalks that are deficient, and it'll cost about $1.5 billion, and that's from the newspapers. Data collection and modeling. If we don't have the data, it's almost impossible to model what you don't have. And of course, performance measures. How are we going to measure if we don't have the data and we can't do the modeling? So we're dealing with a lot of qualitative information that we will find ways of working with until we eventually get the data. But while we're still doing it, we are developing the data and trying to find ways of getting the data. And of course, find the gaps in funding, close those gaps, and get them all unsolved. And this is the way that we try to put it. The transportation infrastructure should be the focus of all users, or favor all users. An automobile should be a choice, not a requirement, which is where it is right now for most of our residents. And probably throughout the state as well. And that's it.
Thank you so much. Stand by for questions. Dr. London, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Usually I say my best things on mute, so we're glad that you're not on mute. Your PowerPoint is up, and Dr. London is from UC Davis, as you can see. I'm going to talk a little about social equity, so please... go ahead. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, and thanks to your business council and council for governments for Fresno County, I should say, for allowing me to join you this way. And you might think about this a little bit as the scene from Ten Commandments, where the voice of God is coming from the cloud saying, Moses, go forth to the promised land. Not everyone knows that he was actually talking about Fresno. But we also know that sometimes those journeys can take a while, 4 years, maybe hopefully less than that. So anyway, I'm going to share this a little bit of lessons learned. I can't tell if people are laughing, by the way, which is always hard when you're doing this. Anyway, so I'm going to be sharing actually less of a data presentation and more of a... another lessons learned and process conversation. Next, please. So the core challenge that that we've worked with through the Center for Regional Change over the years has been to try to enhance integration of social equity principles and values and organizations into urban and regional planning. And I'll talk about the specific cases in a moment. And just to telegraph the main point up front, what we've found is that relationships matter between all of the different entities that are involved in the planning. And I thought Steve Frisch covered that really nicely in the part of the talk that I heard, talking about relationships. The context matters where this planning process is happening. The different kinds of tools matter for success. The technical capacity to use those tools is crucial, and then also the timing, the point of engagement, when those tools and when those relationships are being put into place. Next, please. So the three case studies really briefly that I'll touch on. One is some earlier work that I've shared at the COG in different forms over the years, but is environmental justice mapping project, creating this cumulative environmental vulnerability assessment and working with a diverse and very sophisticated coalition of social equity advocates up and down the valley. The second is working on SB 375 in the San Joaquin Valley, and the third, although I'm actually going to switch those orders, the third of the cases is working on development of an SES with SACOG here where I am in the Sacramento region. And I'll be touching on all of those factors that I mentioned, success factors, as I go through each next week. So the first is this San Joaquin Valley Cumulative Environmental Vulnerability Assessment. And I'm going to ask for three clicks so I can put it up all on screen at the same time. So what we did in the San Joaquin Valley over the course of about 3 years is to help develop an analysis of both environmental justice and social vulnerability, and to show how those map onto each other. And again, I think some of the presentations of Dr. Bird and Dr. Rutledge covered nicely some of the disparities by geography and by demographic group. And so our hope was to create this sort of fine-grained analysis that could complement the work of the San Joaquin Valley Air Pollution Control District, the green map on the left. And also, as the project went on, to try to inform the work of the state, Cal EPA, and their Cal Virus Green Map. So working over time, one more click, please, so we should have an image of the people on the bottom. Over the course of 3 years, working with this coalition of groups, produced this map, and as I say, and this report, and as I say, then influence the state as a whole. Next, please, that should be on the screen, that grand push towards environmental justice. And so that kind of capacity over time was able to build in the environmental justice network, and this is a letter sent from one of the advocate groups, ECEJ, to CAPEPA, engaging in that statewide tool process and talking about this collective effort towards data gathering and environmental justice mapping. Next, please, we should have the image of the multicolored table. So the factors across all of these different, all of the different factors of relationships and regional context and so on. So in the green, it's sort of the most conducive to having the impact that we're looking for. Yellow is somewhere in the middle, and red is sort of the most challenging, not insurmountable, but most challenging. So looking at this, you can see that the relationships between our research group and the advocates was quite strong. The relationship with the agencies here, the Pollution Control District, was somewhat in the middle, some really positive elements and some just less of a strong connection. The regional context was challenging, and don't need to say much more about that there. Environmentally challenging, as well as some of the social and economic factors. The tools were strong and green, but capacity for both community and agencies was sort of middling. Timing was good because it came just as the state tool coronavirus screen was rolling out. And the impacts, you can see here, were mixed. At the local level, advocates were able to use this in a number of their community development efforts. It was less successful to have this tool be implemented by the Air District, but at the state level, let's just say, it was quite strong and had a big influence. So next week, we should have the slide that says SD375 Sacramento, and then I'll ask for three clips. We actually have the map, the coalition on mutual equity, and the blueprint. So in the Sacramento area, we worked under contract with SACOC with funding from their Sustainable Community Partnership funding from the federal partnership and a coalition called the Coalition on Mutual Equity, and designed needs assessment tools such as this Opportunity Index. We also created a Vulnerability Index, and the COG was able to use those in selecting their transit priority areas, as well as conducting the overall analysis of the scenarios as a whole as part of their EIR. And what was really important here is that we work both in an inside-out and outside-in role. So we worked with the Coalition of Regional Equity, building capacity and learning from them what their interests were, and integrating that into our tools. And we were working, as I say, directly with SACOG and trying to infuse input that we got from our community partners and our own technical analysis into the plan. And as a result, the blueprint really did integrate social equity to a fairly high degree. Next, please. This should be the slide that says Classic Partnership. So just a couple quotes from some of the planners that talked about how these tools are really helpful in helping them integrate environmental justice and social equity into their tools. And that was both about technical elements, but also a lot about the relationship elements. This is a partnership, teamwork, people building off each other, and this sort of coalescing this broader group of stakeholders. So the next slide, please, says uptake analysis, and then one more click, so we have the blue box. So in this case, the relationship with the community was strong because we were working directly with the COG. That relationship was quite strong. The regional context was relatively conducive to the smart growth and social equity approach. The tools that we turned out were quite fit. The community capacity was somewhat limited while we had a strong relationship with the Equity Coalition. It didn't have a lot of resources, personnel resources or technical resources to work with, where in contrast, the COG had been very strong. The timing was good. We were lined up quite well. The impact was very good at the local level, with the selection of TPA and priority areas strong at the regional and somewhat less on the state, just because that's the purpose. So in the San Joaquin Valley, so this slide should say SB375 San Joaquin, and then we'll click once and twice. So we worked with a really terrific coalition of advocates. I just have the image here of the groundswell, but they included groups like Leadership Council Justice and Accountability, a whole coalition of groups coming in through Climate Plan, American Farmland Trust, and many others, and really was a very rewarding experience because the capacity was so high. These were advocates that both were connected to community. They had also the bigger picture at the regional and statewide level, and increasingly had a very strong technical savvy. So we designed a number of tools. I'm not and talk about the individually here, but health impact assessment, jobs, housing, fit, using vulnerability and opportunity indices, and share those with advocates to inform their engagement from a data-driven way with the COG in a number of the different counties in the region, Fresno, Mendocino County, and Kern more intensely than the others. And we believe had some significant degree of impact. But it's also a challenging environment to be in, and so the next slide, titled This is a Poor Country. Really understanding some of the socioeconomic pressures that communities and the region as a whole are under in the San Joaquin Valley, and needing to balance the concerns around social equity with some of the very understandable concerns about jobs and poverty, and really try to come from the perspective of seeing these as complementary, really not in opposition to each other at all. And I think that was actually over time quite successful. So the next slide, please, this is uptake analysis, San Joaquin Valley, and then the blue line there. So here again, we have relationships quite strong. Wow. The advocates building over time, I think, from a not very connected relationship with the COG to quite a successful and quite a close working relationship, and I think that's on its way towards being very much so. They say the regional context has significant challenges, manifest in that quote. The tools were rigorous. We believe the capacity in terms of resources were challenged on the community side as well as the COG side, just in terms of available funding and staffing and so on. The timing was challenging. Things were happening very quickly and also so somewhat hard to keep up, essentially. The local impact, I think, is present, but will probably be growing, hopefully, as the SES moves into implementation phase. And to say the regional impact, we believe, was quite strong and exciting and manifest very much by the folks in the room and the conversation in the room today. And at the state level, again, it was somewhat there in the middle, since they were regional plans, not statewide plans. So the last slide, please, is the conclusion. So a lot of these conclusions actually were quite similar to the ones that Steve so nicely laid out. But to really consider when designing planning processes to understand them certainly as technical processes, but also relational processes, that processes that are embedded in place, the people elements of place, the economic, the political, the social, to really think about how well the tools are aligned with the job at hand, who has the capacity and what kinds of capacities are needed to use those tools successfully, and what kind of timing is available, and sometimes understanding that you kind of have to go slow, start slow to move fast. So those are, and then following under that is some of the specifics of the planning process, thinking about what the appropriate technical assistance is, and then considering the mix of inside out, outside in strategy. So I'll close with that. And the last slide just has our contact information. And I believe in the packets there's a number of handouts on some of the specific tools that we've added. Focus today on any of the technical details. So thanks so much, and I hope there will be questions after the close of the panel. I'll look forward to that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lundy. So we have about 10 minutes. We're going to try to get a few questions. Again, there's the breakout session where you can ask more specific questions. But are there questions now from the collective, besides Jeff? No, I'm kidding. Just kidding. From the collective group of the panel. Jeff, yes, you live in a blue neighborhood. Sorry.
No, that wasn't a question. There were two maps that were shown. One was the bicycle riding map. I think it was the first one you showed. The other one was the heart attack map. I was curious if there is a correlation between, or if you have a layer that compares those two.
The bike. Okay, so here's the problem with the bicycle information.
Right.
The bicycle information, if you look at the variance around the mean, it's statistically insignificant. So there is no correlation. There are just as many communities who are not bicycling and don't have a problem with heart attack as there are that are bicycling and are having a problem with heart attack. The problem is that now if I did it with income, that would be a completely different story.
Correct.
And if I did it with fine particulate matter, that'd be another story. So the map, the data that informed the physical activity, so whether that was walking or bicycling to work, is severely limited because it's based on U.S. Census American Community Survey, which is annually collected data, and it's basically modeled data anticipating based on these metrics that are reported annually.
Okay.
So, yeah.
The other bicycle question that relates to your presentation is that most of the people that in L.A. or in the Southern California Chicago area are going to work on the bikes. Do we have figures here that...
Yeah, the figures I showed you were going to work on their bikes.
They're going, okay, but
yeah.
Commuters.
Yeah.
I think the issue, particularly with the American Community Survey, is that they ask the same questions, and then what you end up is you end up with a subset of a subset of a subset. So when they go to California, they may only have about 60 people in their survey that's actually in this area, and two of them are bike riders. So that they have to extrapolate out of that, and that's the issue.
It's always a sampling issue, yeah.
Other questions for these three folks or Dr. London on the phone? I never thought I would sit in a COG boardroom and talk so much about health. I think it's like a shift. It feels like a shift. It's a good shift, but it's interesting. Any other questions? All right.
Where the 12 zip codes that you were talking about?
Yeah.
Are those Fresno Clovis area? Are they outlying communities?
They're actually a mix. So lion's share, proportionately, would make sense that a majority of them lie in Fresno just because of the population density,
right?
And the number of zip codes that constitute Fresno. Clovis has probably about two or three of those, and then we have rural communities that constitute the remaining four or five. So it's quite a nice cross-section of the Central Valley. When I pulled out the data, I was very surprised because it's quite beautiful in the way that it catches the at-risk communities throughout the county, and is not just Fresno, Clovis, centric.
All right, thank you, panelists, and Dr. London on the phone.